It's August 18th, 2016. Happy Helium Discovery Day, happy Bad Poetry Day, and happy Mail Order Catalog Day. And I guess we should add happy Mr. Brexit Day. Oh, God. It's another week, folks. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. Well, the air is starting to get thick. No, not with humidity, but with more craziness around the presidential election and so much more. Today, we're going to be looking at the Trump Defiles, our weekly update on Trump craziness. Kathleen Kane, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, was convicted on all charges this past week. Pat Toomey officially supports Trump, and progressive groups once again miss another opportunity. ABSCUF is getting ready to authorize a strike, first ever strike in the state system of higher education in Pennsylvania. Oh, and so much more. And I remind you that Raging Chicken Radio is a project of Raging Chicken Press. Check out all our citizen journalism at RagingChickenPress.org. You can subscribe to Raging Chicken Radio on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iTunes. Subscribing to Raging Chicken Radio is one of the easiest things that you can do to help support this podcast and all the work that we do with Raging Chicken. Raging Chicken turned 5 this past July. Yes, it did indeed, folks. You can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull no punches progressive media in PA. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening on Podbean, just click Become a Patron. That's that little green button right up on the top, and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the thank you gifts for each membership level while you're there. So as we said before, last week, that we had a backlog on the brewcast. Remember, that's the work that collaboration we're doing with Binyak Biotech Brews. We should have the next episode up by no later than beginning of next week. Should be pretty cool. And Matthew Binyak and I are going to be recording some additional episodes from there. So we should be back on track. And then later this week, either later today or tomorrow, is going to be the return of the sit down. This week, I'm talking to Colleen Clemens, Dr. Colleen Clemens. We'll be talking about feminism in higher education, the presidential elections, and even the Olympics. So tune in, folks. And also, I said last week that, you know, the last couple of weeks, actually, we've been rethinking a little bit about how we do things here at Raging Chicken. We started out as an online publication, and now we've launched this podcast, and exciting. You know, it really is exciting, folks. But it's also kind of stretching us a bit thin. This past month has been a perfect example of that. You got one little vacation, you got one little kind of house project gone awry, and then it kind of throws the whole thing kind of up in the air. So we're going to look back and bring on some new writers, some social media organizers, some tech folks to bring our build our framework for the next chapter of Raging Chicken Press and Raging Chicken Media. So if you're interested in helping out, pursuing an internship or writing, contributing to Raging Chicken Press or Raging Chicken Radio, drop me a line at RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. You will notice some updates on our webpage. It's been pretty cool. We moved over to a web service. From called Flywheel. It came from recommendations from Seth Goldstein. Seth Goldstein is a WordPress developer and kind of all around kind of tech dude out of Doylestown, PA. And he highly recommended Flywheel. So we've kind of shifted over. And I don't know if people have been paying attention to it very much, have looked at it, but actually our pages are loading faster. So far I've been super happy with the service. So that's not to knock where we were with Bluehost. We were with Bluehost since the beginning. But Flywheel, it's a little startup from down in Nebraska, I believe, or Oklahoma, one of the two. And they've been awesome so far. So we're going to have some kind of promotions for Flywheel and things like this that'll be coming up, and that's another way that you contribute to what we do. So check us out. And you know, if you see anything that stands out, you got questions about, please let us know. RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. So here we are, back and out to coop, and it's been a brutal week of heat and humidity, not to mention insane politics. So welcome back, Sean Kitchen, out there in Harrisburg. How's the weather been out there?
Really bad. It was pretty bad the past week. You know, I have like a 20 or 30 foot walk from my car to from my apartment to my car when I'm going to work in the morning. And some days I am drenched in sweat after that short walk. with this humidity that's been out there. It seems as soon as that air smacks you in the face, you just start sweating and you get tired.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, in the last week, we were talking about before we went on today is that, you know, I get out of my car. If I got the air conditioning, I get out of my car and all of a sudden I can't see because my glasses are all fogged up. It was so bad. We went to the movies the other night where I was going to take the kids to the local pool. But it looked like it was going to downpour, thunderstorm. It was like this crazy thunderstorm projected. So we went to we'll just go to the movies instead. Get out of the movies. Not a drop of rain fell. Like the humidity is at about 100% and I can't see worth beans because my glasses are all gone. It's been crazy. So, I mean, speaking of craziness, I've said now that Trump has been going off the rails. The metaphor doesn't work anymore because somehow he's keeping the train rolling as it plunders down the side of the cliff here. What's going on with this?
I don't know. You know, well, Breitbart is now running a presidential campaign. That's pretty awesome. Trump had another shakeup with his campaign staff for it, the campaign leader or whatever. They're down at in the campaign. It was revealed that he was working for a bunch of dictators back in the late 90s, and he has money to Russia's Yanukovych, who was the president of Ukraine.
This is Paul Manafort you're talking about, right? Paul Manafort.
Or whatever his name is. And then, what else? Oh, he said that the only way that we're going to win Pennsylvania is through voter fraud. There was a really nice, funny piece by Atrios up on his website last week. I believe it was last Saturday, basically saying they're going to let the blah people vote, you know, making fun of Rick Santorum, basically saying that the black people are going to be coming out to vote in Philly. And that's a thing in today's world, letting black people vote.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, these people are off the rails anyways. I mean, the fact that, you know, if we go back and chart with a Paul Manafort issue, I mean, this is a pretty significant issue. I mean, the fact that he's turned up, I believe that his name turned up, I think, 22 times on a ledger, a kind of secret ledger that was found as part of, you know, if you remember the kind of whole Orange Revolution in Ukraine, one of the things that the outgoing dictators and their kind of whole administration tried to do is they tried to basically dump all the documents. But they dumped them in the fountain or the little pond out back of the palace or whatever it was. And part of the protesters who stormed the palace basically dove into there and pulled out all the documents and went back and dried all the documents and all this stuff, like reams and reams and reams of paper. And one of those, they found this actually wasn't part of those documents, part of some other documents they found in a different building. I think it was part of the party headquarters there in Ukraine, that it was basically a ledger of payments. And Paul Manafort, who's now basically running Trump's campaign, shows up 22 times and for payments in excess of, you know, several million dollars. It's unclear at this point about whether he actually received that or these were planned payments. That's unclear at this point, but it's pretty remarkable. I mean, the New York Times has been doing some excellent reporting on that. But the fact that you've got that guy on that ledger, and if you recall back in the Republican convention when they had the party platform debates, the only thing that was pushed for by the Trump campaign was stuff on Ukraine, right? It was pretty much everyone, all the reports coming from the floor of the Republican National Convention were that, you know, the Trump campaign was virtually absent in discussions, except when it came to softening the language on Ukraine. So you put these, you know, two and two together, and then you have Paul Manafort coming on, you know, every network denying that he had anything to do with it or the Trump campaign had any knowledge of that move. I mean, this is just dirty, dirty politics.
And one of the things about the Manafort issue that the Young Turks brought up recently, and then this was documented going back in the early 1990s, I believe the Center for Public Integrity issued a report that he was on the payroll for a bunch of other dictatorships that are located in the Philippines and parts of Africa. And he was on the payroll there with his lobbying firm, but also at that time he was working for George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. So Manafort has a history of working for right-wing dictators in different countries around the world, but then also working for presidential campaigns and as a consulting lobbyist for presidents themselves. So this is a track record that's been going on for about 20, 30 years now at Manafort, but it's only come to light because of his dealings with Putin and Yanukovych in Ukraine.
That's right. And let's be clear too. We should say that, you know, there's so far, there's been nothing turned up that saying that Manafort, anything he's done is illegal, right? That it just makes him, one, a horrible human being, right? And someone you don't want anywhere near, you know, the levers of power in the, you know, in the U.S. or anywhere else for that matter. The guy's a scumbag.
Yeah, definitely. And you can tell, I mean, there, what else is there to say?
Yeah, there's nothing about to say. The guy's a scumbag. Yeah. So, you know, then meanwhile, you know, you got Trump going absolutely kind of crazy once again. He just doesn't seem to be able to do anything. And, you know, I think that so much of what I've been seeing over the past week, at least, it seems that he's trying to groom some sort of soft landing one way or another. Because he just, you know, he gets there's reports that are saying that basically he gets advice from, you know, the politicos, the people that have kind of managed campaigns before. Here's what he's got to do. And he's able to read a speech. You know, he gave this, you know, this speech on quote unquote economic policy and, you know, a speech. He gave a speech on, you know, foreign policy, stuff that he read off the teleprompter, and he can keep it together for about a day. And then after that, he just kind of,
you know, he goes back on Twitter with his Twitter finger.
Exactly. And so, you know, I'm just at this point, I'm just really curious about what's going to happen with the debates, if he's actually going to be showing up for the debates. I hope to God he does. Because I think that's going to be, one, it's going to be some of the best TV I've seen in a while, and because it'll just be fun to watch Hillary just to kind of shred him. And then it's also going to be interesting to see whether or not you have Gary Johnson picking up enough steam as kind of more and more Republicans start to bolt. But speaking of Republicans that are bolting, we've got someone right here in Pennsylvania who's not bolting at all from Donald Trump. Instead, he's getting a kind of big, warm, sloppy kiss.
I don't know if you could call it that, but it's, you know, the classic non-endorsement of Donald Trump. You know, Pat Toomey, I guess last week we were talking about Pat Toomey and why he's become, you know, and the pressure the media is putting on him after the latest round of gaffes. Mm-hmm. And later on that day, or as we were recording, he went on a right-wing radio in Philadelphia and pretty much summed up that, you know, Trump's better than Clinton on foreign policy because of what happened in Benghazi. So I guess that he stuck his flag in the ground without saying he's supporting Donald Trump. But, you know, Trump would be better for the country on foreign policy issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and you're right, it was kind of a more of a lukewarm thing. But frankly, if you're going to say any, you're going to make any statements about in support of Donald Trump on things at this point, I mean, you're in bed with the guy.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. And that's the first time I think he came out and really supported Trump. You know, for a while, he said he has to wait and see. He still has to, like, see what Trump. And pretty much the media, a lot of newspapers around the state called him out and said, you know, what else do you have to see for you to, you know, to endorse or not endorse this guy?
No, exactly. And I think that, you know, and this is my own little hobby horse. Okay, I'll say that right off the bat, is that, you know, here again we've got missed opportunity on the progressive side of things, right? And not everyone on the progressive side, but, you know, one of the things that came up, for example, this past week, the AFL-CIO has been on this little campaign, right, through their Action Network. They're basically calling for petitions. To, you know, tell Pat Toomey to stop supporting Donald Trump, right? And it's not just Donald that Pat Toomey that they're doing this with. They're doing this with Ron Johnson, Roy Blunt, Marco Rubio, a whole bunch of politicos. But what gets me about this, right? Just so, for example, here's what the petition says. It says, quote, from mocking a reporter with disabilities to attacking the family of a fallen soldier to supporting right to work laws that are dangerous and unnecessary, Donald Trump has made it clear that he is unfit to be president. Despite everything Trump has done, though, Pat Toomey or fill in the blank, whoever they're targeting, is still supporting him. When's it going to be enough? Sign the petition to tell Pat Toomey to renounce his support for Donald Trump. Okay. Now that's okay. It's reasonable. Okay. It's a reasonable ask and things like this. But then I'm like, well, if you get what you want, what do you get? You get a stronger Pat Toomey candidate, right? If Pat Toomey comes out, right, and say he caves to all this pressure, right, and then says he renounces his support for Donald Trump is already going to lose, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that can help, right, is to make Pat Toomey a stronger candidate, right? Why on earth that you don't have, like, the AFL-CIO and every other progressive network basically taking Toomey's face and Trump's face and putting them in bed together every chance that they get, I mean, that is what you want. You want these folks tied together in the ways that there is no daylight between the two. Because frankly, everything that Trump is saying out loud right now are things that Pat Toomey has basically supported either directly or indirectly for his entire career.
Well, and then, you know, as we were prepping for this podcast, I sent you a link to what the ads that Narwhal are running.
Narwhal, yeah.
Narwhal, what they're running against Toomey in all these different states, basically putting Toomey with this nice little Zoolander gif, you know, sitting next to Trump in the passenger seat of this car, and then with Paul Ryan and Harry Reid right behind him, and basically nailing him to the cross saying, Toomey's horrible on women's issues. Here's what Toomey supported is exactly what Trump is supporting on the issues when it comes to women's reproductive rights. I think that's the way you go after him, and you mock him that way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because that image is exactly it, right? It's kind of kooky, right? It's kind of in with that gift thing, and it basically puts them all right in that same car because that's what they are. I mean, this is not brain surgery, and it should be absolutely common sense by now that this is exactly what the Republican Party has turned into. This is not just Donald Trump. This is the Republican Party at this point.
Oh yeah, it's exactly right, and what that ask does from the AFL-CIO is Pat Toomey's already walking a tightrope. You know, he's not trying to alienate the conservative voters, and he's not trying to alienate the people who will most likely vote for him, your moderate Republicans in the Philadelphia suburbs. You know, he's not trying to alienate those people. But if he steps down, you know, and says, yes, I will not endorse Donald Trump, he is now playing to those moderate Republican voters in the Philadelphia area who are already against Trump or your independent voters. And that's going to boost up his numbers if he comes out and does that.
Exactly. And in a state like Pennsylvania, that's especially important because, you know, if you look at, you know, the history of Pennsylvania elections, right, Pennsylvania voters have a history of splitting their ballots, right? You have some states where, you know, people are pretty much like doing straight line Republican by large margins. That's not so true in Pennsylvania. And we saw this in our own statewide elections last year in the gubernatorial race. And we see this again and again and again, is that Pennsylvania voters will, I mean, they may vote for Hillary Clinton or someone else other than Trump, even if they're kind of moderate Republicans. That doesn't mean that that's going to have any kind of coattails, right? That's all the more reason why that right now that you need people out there that you need any organization that is kind of campaigning to defeat Republicans, defeat Trump and so on, needs to be tying people like Pat Toomey, who is already on the fringe in the right wing, right? Tying Pat Toomey directly to Donald Trump and saying that these two things are the same. You know, it's like the Janus face coin, right? This is two faces on the head of the same coin.
Yep. And one more thing I'd like to make is that Trump is not even running a campaign in Pennsylvania. He's not even running a campaign in Pennsylvania. He has no groundwork going on. But yeah, he has time last week to say if he loses Pennsylvania, there's going to be voter fraud. He has no one door knocking. He's not spending money on any of the television airwaves. But he keeps on saying that the only reason why he loses Pennsylvania is through voter fraud. Basically, the people in Philadelphia come out and vote, you know, 100% for Hillary Clinton in some of these precincts.
No, that's right. And I think that, you know, this goes back to, I think we talked a little bit about this last week, but this is coupled with his increasing calls to basically have people go and monitor the polls, which has now caught the attention of federal law enforcement, right? Looking at the potential of voter intimidation at the polls and so. And, you know, again, we have a history of that in Pennsylvania too as well. I remember back in the day of Tom Corbett, right? Corbett basically said if you kind of suppress the vote in Philadelphia, right? Then we have a chance of winning this for Mitt Romney, right? This is back in the last presidential election.
Terzai, you mean?
I'm sorry. No. This was Corbett. This came out of Corbett, and Terzai said this too as well. But it came out of Corbett's office too as well. They knew if they could hold the vote down in Philadelphia, and that is code, right, for stopping Black people from voting is really what that means. And then here you have Trump out there in Erie in his little rally. I mean, I guess that's his ground game. He goes and he shows up and he gives a rally. But that's what he's doing is out there. He's fanning that narrative, which is potentially disastrous.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what it looks like November 8th at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night when the election's already called.
Yeah, exactly. What happens at that point? That's a really good point. So one more thing on Pennsylvania, then we got to take a break. So it's been an active week here in Pennsylvania. We had Trump that came here. You know, Hillary was down in Philly, right? I mean, she was down in Philly this past week. You also have, so you have that on the presidential level. You have Toomey coming out, and there's kind of some pushback on Toomey. But the big news out of Pennsylvania was also that, you know, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Kathleen Kane, was convicted on all counts, right? That was 9 counts, I believe, of basically, you know, leaking documents illegally, committing perjury and, you know, all sorts of stuff. This has been just something to behold. I went back and reread this a couple days ago. There was a story in Esquire. I think it was published in February or so. And it kind of basically gave a timeline of everything that happened in this case. And it really is a bizarre case. And, you know, so now you've got the first ever woman ever appointed to that office, right? Is going down, right? There's 90 days until the sentencing comes down, and she could spend some jail time here.
Yeah. So there's 2 points I'd like to make.
Yeah.
One, she's absolutely guilty, right?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, there's no question about that. She's guilty. She was convicted on all charges. She was found guilty. And especially the stuff that came out from her trial was not like this was like a questionable trial, especially what happened with her consultant, basically the consultant spilling the whole entire beans on the second day of the trial. So I believe she's guilty. On the second hand, there are a lot of people out there, especially in our Facebook feeds, who think that Kane was railroaded and mm-hmm. that this was pretty much like a political trial. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that to be the fact. Do I believe Kane was railroaded? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think she was playing with fire and she got burned, but she was also going after a group of people who have been playing this game their whole entire lives.
Right.
Where she was going after the old boys network, and with they goaded her, they caught her, they caught her breaking the law, trying to retaliate against this network for the Porngate stuff, and she got burned. And big so time. Like those are the two issues. So yeah, she's absolutely guilty in what she did. And a lot of people feel like she was railroaded. I believe, yes, she was railroaded, but I believe she was absolutely guilty.
Right. And
she was playing politics with the way they were, except they didn't get caught. She did.
Right. And I'm glad you framed it in that way, because both of those things can be true, right? I mean, both of those things could be true at the same time, that yes, she did what she was convicted of, and at the same time that she was railroaded. Because and what's bothered me about, you know, again, going back and kind of rereading some of the timeline and some of the backstory here, is that the tragedy for me in all of this, right, is that what Kathleen Kane was able to expose, right, the fact that you had this, not just an old boys network, right, but this power, the insider power of these kind of old white guys or older white guys, not all old even for that matter, but white men primarily, out of the Attorney General's office and other offices up to the Supreme Court of the state, were just passing around horribly violent pornographic films, films
racist.
And gifts and racist stuff, right, and all laughing about it. Right. That kind of stuff. Right. You know, if you talk to anybody about kind of like a culture of government or culture of business or whatever it is like this, that has a direct impact on policy. Right. And the fact that you're basically saying, if you want to be part of this power elite, right, these are our set of values. Right. And she was able to expose that.
And
right?
She also upended the PA Supreme Court.
That's right.
A lot of stuff happened. She ended the political careers of a lot of people, but ultimately in the end, she's going to jail for leaking stuff where, you know, she probably could have gotten away with it, you know, with exposed. She didn't really have to probably leak that grand jury testimony to go after her political opponents.
This is what happens when, because, you know, what happened, because she did not take the stand. Right. So, and we didn't get back into the backstory of all this kind of stuff, like too much, right? Because what would have been really interesting to hear about this. And this is kind of like whatever, water under the bridge or whatever. But the kind of things that the specific stuff that led up to her releasing that. Right. Because you're right. She was prodded. She was goaded to do all these things. But ultimately, she did them. Because what just was so frustrating is that if she had just proceeded, right, and not got into that kind of dirt, I think we would all be better off for it right now, right? Because there would be trials, right? There would be more cases that would be coming out that would be exposing this kind of corruption and just absolutely, you know, sexist, racist, violent behavior inside a very, very corrupt political system in Pennsylvania. And that's a shame. That is a huge, huge shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For instance, I think people think about one of the stories that leaked out of this was a Justice Eakin, his one of his court rulings on a 11-year-old girl consenting to sex in the Philadelphia Phillies parking lot because it happened on private property, even though it could have been rape. And he was sending out these emails joking about rape, rape culture, and racism and everything else. And you're going to try to tell me those emails don't directly affect the way that he was, what he thinks privately does not come onto the bench with him. And he throws that, those biases or those jokes aside.
Well, let's be clear. This is not privately. This was on his work email, right? Yeah. This was as part. I mean, you send stuff from your work email. I mean, I work at a public university, and it's common knowledge, right? It's like the university is the one who owns this mail system, right? If you're going to be going on that mail system, this is them. Yeah.
And ultimately, the taxpayers can file a written request to get the stuff that's on your email.
That's right. And so, I mean, how are you in kind of top levels of law enforcement or kind of the judicial system? And that's not just absolutely common sense. Right. If you want to be a horrible human being on your own email, right, and things like this, I can still hate you for it, right, and like not want you anywhere near me. But you know, you're not doing it in an official capacity. You send that directly from your state servers. I mean, you're just you're not only are you a horrible human being, right, but you know,
you're kind of stupid at the same time.
Well, you've also committed, you know, a crime of sorts, right? Potentially. I mean, we'll see how that goes. But anyway, so yeah, so that's it's been an interesting week here in Pennsylvania. Now it's going to be it's going to be fascinating to see where things go from here. I mean, we're in an election year. You got the attorney general's going to jail, right? You got Tom Wolf, who's basically, you know, practically standing alone out there in terms of pushing anything into policy level. It looks like everything is just going to freeze to a halt here in Pennsylvania. But we shall see. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, ABSCUF, the Faculty Union for State System of Higher Education, which I'm a member. We're kind of approaching a strike authorization vote, which will be a week from today. So talk a little about that higher education, and then we're going to get into some fun stuff maybe too as well. So we'll be back right after this. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. We'll be right back with Sean Kitchen.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day that is remembered as Kemi Bloody Thursday in Finland. Two strikers were killed. Kemi is a lumber town in northern Finland. The lumber workers in the area went out on strike when the government proposed slashing their wages by more than 30%. The strike was soon joined by sawmill and dock workers. The walkout caused a massive logjam on the Kemijoki River. On the fateful day, 3,000 strikers engaged in a peaceful march. They encountered armed police, and a confrontation ensued. Police had guns on their side. The workers only had sticks and stones. One striker was shot and killed. Another was hit by a truck. Finnish army troops were called into Kemi. 32 strike leaders were arrested. In response to the violence, sympathy strikes were called by other unions, including the Siemens Union. These strikes were seen by many as a fight between the Finnish elected government and communists in the nation's trade unions. Officials in the United States worried the strikes were an attempt by the communists to open the door to intervention in Finland by the Soviet Union. After World War II, Cold War politics shaped responses to labor struggles in many nations. A song, Fly Black Winged Bird, remembers the fallen workers. The lyrics, translated into English, began, "Fly, black winged bird, with blood on your feathers across the lands. From village to village, carry your message. Open up, autumn sky, for the sad news to spread. Shame on a country where an unarmed man gets shot. Shame on the one who calls the shots."
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. And we talk to Sean Kitchen, our capital correspondent out there, who's been kind of braving the heat and humidity in just a crazy capital. It's been nuts. So one of the things I want to just touch upon briefly, and we're going to do a short segment on this, and then we're going to break. Sean's got to get back to has got to get to work early today, and I've got a second interview later on this afternoon. So we'll do a little shorter segment now. We'll go a little long on the first one. But as I said before the break, ABSCUF, which is the faculty union for the faculty of the 14 university state system of higher education, is that we have been 414 days without a contract. So our contract expired June 30th, 2015. We've been negotiating ever since, or we could say quote unquote negotiations in quotes, because the state system, the chancellor's office and the people negotiating on the state side of things, basically refused to negotiate hardly at all for almost a year. And yeah, they met and they kind of talked about ideas and things like this, but everything really, really general. And then there was some switch up with some lawyers back in February, and the state system could not make any other proposed dates for spring negotiations until it came to the very, very end of the spring semester. And every time ABSCUF would push and say to the state system, say, hey, look, you know, we've got some proposals, let's exchange proposals. The state would say, really, really, really don't have anything. We're just still getting together. We really don't have anything. And then the semester ends. The first date, I think it was the first day, it was a June 10th date when they met. Once again, the state comes in with like hundreds of changes. They want hundreds of changes, and it was clear that they had been looking to wait until the semester was over and then drop this in ABSCUF's lap as kind of like a bombshell. And they did it like the night before the negotiations. It was pretty crazy. So since that point, and just to give you a brief rundown about what is happening there, is that in the state system of higher education, ABSCUF, that faculty union, and our contract, we have pretty much what is considered the gold standard of protections for adjunct faculty members. So adjunct faculty members, they're not tenure line faculty members. They're faculty members that ostensibly are there on a contingent basis from year to year contract as needed. The way that higher education works, however, there is really no such thing as that. That is absolutely on the margins. Really what an adjunct faculty member is they're the low wage workforce that teaches the bulk of general education classes and lower level classes and even some upper division classes the university systems balance their books over, right? So most universities across this country, or at least I say the trend across this country, is to have upwards of between 65 and 75% of a faculty at a university will be adjunct or graduate teaching assistants, any kind of contingent faculty member, right? And 25% tenure line faculty members, right? So you think about the bulk of your education is being done by academic peace workers, basically, right? And now the good news on that front, right, is that finally you have some major organizing that's been going on across this country. SEIU with their Faculty Forward program has been really out in front of this and organizing adjunct faculty in kind of record numbers. It's been pretty impressive. But that's the national picture. ABSCUF has actually the reverse of that in our contract. In our contract, we have a cap of 25% of adjunct faculty members. And that's really significant. I was told back in the day, this is kind of year, I guess, 2000, back then I did a kind of internship over the summer with the American Federation of Teachers and in their national office in Washington, D.C., doing some research for updating a publication was called The Vanishing Professor. And The Vanishing Professor was about that kind of rise of contingent labor in higher education. And they were looking to update that publication. And part of my job was basically to call around across the country to faculty unions and asking them what provisions they have in their contract that protected contingent faculty members. Okay. And what I kept on hearing back on that day was that, I got to look at ABSCUF's contract. And at that point I was like, ABSCUF? Like, what's that? Right. I had no idea what ABSCUF was. I have no idea where it was. But when I was applying for jobs, right, academic jobs down the line, and then I saw positions open up in the states of higher education, I already knew that that was a really good contract. So that was, one of the things that kind of got me here. anyways. So that was pointed to me, you know, Abscuff's contract has been the gold standard in those kind of protections. Well, basically, Pashi's proposal, that's a state system's proposals for this contract, just like the last contract, is they basically want to turn the state system of higher education into the same kind of model that we see across the country. They want it basically staffed by contingent faculty members. They want to gut the tenure line faculty members, and they want more control over determining what the curriculum is and how it's delivered. So faculty members obviously are you know, a little up in arms about this. And to give you some kind of perspective is that this the proposals are to kind of increase the cap of temporary faculty members in our contract, temporary or adjunct faculty members, from 25% to 30%, to increase their course load from a 4-4 teaching load to a 5-5 teaching load, to allow graduate students to become teachers too as well. And so if you start doing the math on some of this stuff and what kind of impact that is, like, not only does it increase the numbers of adjunct faculty members by 5%, right? It also then adds another layer of contingent faculty members, which are graduate teaching assistants, right? So that you're gonna have a higher percentage there. And the impact is that, those are jobs, those are positions that are kind of removed from the tenure line faculty or the regular permanent faculty members. I shouldn't say permanent, but say regular faculty members of tenure line or tenure track. And what the end of that is that basically these folks, we will see, say, if at Kutztown University alone, that's where I teach, the impact would be a loss of 50 tenure line faculty members, right? So it's pretty significant. So anyways, this has been going on for a while now. There's been some changes. Governor Wolf has finally, decided that it was about time to pay attention to higher education. And he basically got rid of the past Board of Governors, the president, the chair of the Board of Governors, Guido Piccini. And we now have a woman in there from Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, I don't have her name right in front of my name, in front of my face, but she's less ideological than you said with Guido Piccini. She's more interested in getting things done. At least that's the other thing that we're hearing about that. That seems to have softened some of the negotiating positions on that on the state side. But all in all, there's been virtually no progress. So what does that lead us to? It leads us to now we're getting ready to take a strike authorization vote.
Might I jump in here real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the things you just said kind of interested me a little bit was that Guido Piccini was stepping, has been removed.
That's right.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit over the past few weeks, and, you know, it just seems really interesting that this hasn't been reported on in the news. Last time Guido Piccini was mentioned in the faculty was about a month ago. I mean, in the press, local press, was about a month ago when some colleges were, some of the universities were talking about increasing tuition. Since then, it seems like this has gone unreported.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, I think we've seen some reporting coming out of Penn Live, right? That's virtually the only reporting that we've been seeing that's been following this closely. I have her name now. Her name is Cynthia Shapira, and I'll give you a little background of the new chair. She's the she's the president of the David S. and Karen A. Shapira Foundation, and she's a community activist, according to her bio. She's previously a management consultant, provided strategic management services to education and nonprofit institutions. She's the chair of the Greater Pittsburgh Jewish Foundation and serves on the boards of the Allegheny County Airport Authority, Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, Point Park University, and Brandeis University in Massachusetts. So there's a bunch of stuff there, you know, that puts her in a kind of, you know, a different category than we saw with Guido Piccini. But you're right, you know, people don't follow this kind of stuff. This is not something that makes for a lot of news. And frankly, and especially in an election year, it's not making news at all.
Yeah, because I actually am filing some right to know requests with the state system of higher education. This is actually one of the things I'm digging into. I found that really interesting, even though, like, what's the background around this? Another thing I have planned in the future that I'm getting my right to know request around is doing a nice little report on the payroll debit cards, or the student loan debit cards that the state system has been handing out to students over the past 6 years now, 7 years. Basically, your loans get distributed onto this nice little shiny little debit card. Mm-hmm. And like the previous reporting, it's loaded up with hidden fees. So we're trying to,
I think that, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, is that, cause I know you mentioned this before. I think we should, so next week we should do a segment on that, and you could lay some of that stuff out for the student. Cause we've talked about the debit cards in terms of the payroll stuff. But we have not yet really talked about on this show, how this works when it comes to student loans.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting. One of the things I actually have, I have my regular request piled up. It's just a matter of gathering all the email addresses now and sending out to those institutions is, you know, I'm asking, it's a pretty extensive like thing I'm digging into, the number of students receiving their student loans, number of students enrolled in this program, the amount of money distributed on from student loans to the students, and the amount of money that's going onto these debit cards, and try to do some calculations, seeing how much of this money is actually going to these students on these debit cards. And then you can make an estimate how much is going back to the banks that are probably giving them these loans.
Right, right. Yes, we definitely, so next week we'll definitely get into that because I think that we need to highlight that. And especially that's a nice little back to school message so that we can get some students focused on that. So I think that would be some awesome, that would be really good to do some organizing on some of the campuses around that stuff. So, I mean, because it's going to be a jam packed semester, I'll tell you. So, I mean, when it comes back to ABSCUF and where that stuff on the contract is, so next Thursday is going to be an emergency legislative assembly meeting, which is basically a meeting of all the representatives from all the campuses about whether to authorize a strike vote on all the campuses. And by all indications at this point, it looks like there's going to be that will probably be a heavy yes vote, which means then 2 weeks later, right, in that first week of September, faculty members, or I'd say faculty union members on every campus in the state system of higher education, all 14 campuses, will be voting about whether or not to authorize a strike. And just yesterday, Ken Mash, he's the president of ABSCUF, he was on the Rick Smith Show, and one of the things that he made clear, and he's made clear all along, is that the state system might think that they're engaged in a little game of chicken because, you know, ABSCUF has never struck before in its entire history. But this time, MASH has made it absolutely clear is that we get that yes vote by faculty members that will be followed shortly thereafter with an actual strike date. And this time, if the state system does not play, we are walking. Right. So the line has been put down there, you know, pretty firmly. And it's going to be pretty serious. You know, I'll tell you, the past couple of weeks, that's what my life has been. You know, I'm our mobilization chair at Kutztown University, and it's been strike prep. It's getting faculty informed, kind of walking through the procedures of kind of going on strike. And we are, you know, going to be moving methodically forward toward that date. You know, we guess there's a Board of Governors meeting that's coming up on October 6th. We expect to be out there in force, faculty from across the state system of higher education, to basically bring our message right to their doorstep. And then, you know, but if that doesn't work after that board meeting, I mean, you know, I think that we've played all our cards. And so the only thing that's going to be left is going to be, you know, a strike. So that's going to be pretty interesting. And one thing I want to say, this is the one message that I, you know, it's been a bit frustrating for me, right? Is that so far we've talked about negotiations and so on, but I have to say this dude, you know, our chancellor, right? This is something that I warned in the pages of Raging Chicken Press, like years ago when Frank Brogan first took over, right? When Frank Brogan first took over, I did background research on this guy, right? I mean, he was Jeb Bush's right-hand man down there in Florida, right? This guy had his hands in some of the worst education policy that has negatively impacted public education, both at the K-12 level and higher education level in the country, right? He's basically been a leader, right, in the privatization schemes and the charterization schemes and the kind of anti-union schemes that everyone is kind of living in right now. And so right at some point, I think soon, that we're going to have to come back and take a really, really close look at this guy, Frank Brogan. Because, look, the state of Pennsylvania has settled all its other union contracts, basically, that are connected to PASHE. Right. As a matter of fact, they've done two of them in the space of all the time that we've been out there negotiating. Right. So they've been able to settle with it. But so the only person that's left sitting there is the Board of Governors, the PASHE Board of Governors, and Frank Brogan. Those are the people that are holding this up. Right. So unless they change their tone, they're going to be causing some serious disruptions to these campuses in short order.
So one more quick question I have for you.
Yeah.
Will there be another photo of you shouting and screaming outside of the PASHE building going up on your Facebook wall in the next couple weeks?
Well, let me put it this way. He's like, the photo is up to somebody else. I will definitely be out there screaming outside of the PASHE, outside the Board of Governors, especially on October 6th. I will definitely be out there organizing. And, you know, we're going to have actions on our local campuses too as well. We're going to be out there on move-in day, which is, you know, August 27th. ABSCUF at Kutztown University's campus and several of the other campuses across the state are going to be out there distributing information to parents, because, you know, our strike authorization vote will be taken on that Thursday before students begin moving in. And we know that parents and students are going to have questions, and we want to be there to kind of let them know.
So there's going to be student outreach about what could potentially happen and what's happening with the contract.
Not only is there going to be, there already is. I mean,
because I remember I was watching the local news out in Harrisburg, and they interviewed a student from Shippensburg, and she basically had to, or she was from the Shippensburg area, going to Clarion and said, "I expect my teachers to be there." Like, and there's really no sense, like, from listening to that, like, she doesn't sound spoiled or entitled. You know, one can make that argument, but I find it's like, there's no sense of class solidarity, or there's no sense of, like, solidarity in general being taught or being, or understood by the younger generation here.
Well, I would disagree with that, right? I would actually say that, look, we have you're taking, you know, they take one student, they interview this one student and ask what the one student thinks, right? That's what you're going to get, right? Expect your teachers to be there? Sure, whatever. I mean, that's you know, she's going to say that. Does that every student? No. And our experience, like, as say Kutztown University, for example, has been very different from that, right? We've been working closely with our students for years now, right? So, for example, Kutztown University, right, they had the polling place for Kutztown students got moved 5 miles off campus, right? This happened a couple of years back, right, before the last round of elections. And so what did we do? Well, we heard that Joe Scaboria, he was the president of the Student Government Association at that point, that he was working with students trying to get that polling place back. So we said, well, how can we help? Right. I mean, that wasn't our self-interest. It was like, look, these students are doing something. Let's get in there and help. And I personally walked to the polls with them like 2 years in a row. Right. It's a 5 mile walk. We walked in heavy traffic, right, to demonstrate that point with banners and signs and all this other kinds of stuff. When we were doing voter registration, we're right there with them helping. They're doing the voter registration. Right. You know, we've been actively working with these students. Now, again, I could still walk on our campus, which we have good relationships with our students, or, for example, Westchester was good relationship. Shippensburg even has really good relations with students, our faculty union is. But I could walk on a Kutztown's campus, and just because we've, you know, worked with students and all this doesn't mean that I can't find a student that's going to be anti-union.
Yeah.
Right. Or not going to have that thing, but that's not it. But, you know, right now, look, I think that, you know, what the idea right now is, it's pretty simple when it comes to students. And this is what I say to my faculty members all the time. I say, look, we're at this point. Our interest and student interest are aligned right now. Neither one of us wants this semester to be disrupted. Right. We want a fair contract so we don't have to go on strike and students don't want to like have their education disrupted, right? We're on the same page at this point, right? We're coming at it from a different perspective. And so, you know, the kinds of things that we're going to be asking students to do, right? And, you know, it's already been going on, is like they've actually offered this to write to their legislatures, right? Write to the Board of Governors, write to the university presidents and say, we need this contract resolved, right? The only thing that's going to get us that strong contract, right? And by strong contract, I don't mean like we're going to be shooting the moon on this, right? I mean, even what ABSCUF has put on the table for what we want, it's fairly modest. So the idea there is to sit there and say, we got to put pressure on our elected officials, put pressure on the Board of Governors, put pressure on the state system of higher education and our university presidents, right, in order to make sure that that contract gets settled and then we can all get back to paying attention to just our classrooms. Because, you know, frankly, faculty right now are frustrated for years and years and years of austerity. We've been watching our jobs get more and more difficult. We've been watching our classes get bigger and we're not able to serve students in the way that we've been able to in the past. We've watched programs being ripped away and kind of like shut down for no good academic reason. You have university presidents that are behaving like CEOs and profit-seeking individuals. This is gotta stop, right? When it comes right down to that, it's like if we don't set the line right now, if we don't set that line in the sand and say we are going to defend the institution of public higher education in this state, right? And we are not going to allow the austerity measures to roll this university system back like they've been doing for the past 8 to 10 years. It's actually been more than that, but we'll say 8 to 10 years, right? If we don't do that now, then those students, those degrees that those students are getting are going to be worth nothing when they get out there in the job market. It's going to be like a diploma mill. And that, if I do not stand up, right, and stop that, if we as faculty do not stand up and stop that, Well, I'd be ashamed to call myself a faculty member, because the fact is, if I don't stand up for what is right now, it's not good. You know, when I think about this, I've got two young kids, right? I've got a 7-year-old and I've got a 5-year-old. And those two are someday are going to have to go to college. And the question is, what am I going to leave for them down the road? That's really kind of where we're at. So anyways, I'm getting way off track here. I know like this, but I'm pretty pissed off, I got to say. So listen, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some fun stuff. Maybe what we'll be doing, after we win a contract with or without a strike. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. We'll be right back talking beer. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight. Hey, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're back with Out the Coop podcast. All right, Sean, give us our latest end of the podcast fun beer discussion.
Okay, if you are living in eastern Pennsylvania, the Harrisburg, Lancaster, and the Philadelphia areas, Wicked Weed is out of Asheville, North Carolina. They are now distributing in the Philadelphia area. They are Asheville, North Carolina is known for all their breweries. Wicked Weed is probably one of the best breweries down there, and it's been a long-awaited trip up here.
So cool. So tell us a little bit about it. Well, tell us about this beer. Why is this good? So,
the other day, I was able to get a 4-pack of their Pernicious IPA, mm-hmm. which is like a similar towards the Marin River cans that I gave you last week.
Yep.
And then I was able to get a 4-pack of a Grapefruit Honey Goes, which is a salted sour. And that was actually
that
pretty good.
Tasty. Tasty, yes, that sounds.
Really good. And I also bought a couple of other like small one bottles. I bought a couple 12-ouncers of their Bourbon Barrel Aged Stout, Dark Age. And then I bought a pear sour that I'm just going to let sit in my closet for a little bit and see how that tastes.
Are you able to pick that up right at Pizza Boy? Are they selling it there?
They were selling it there. It pretty much sold out within a day. But I think this is going to be a more regular occurrence. Their wholesaler is Stockertown, which is out of the Lehigh Valley area.
Ooh, really?
Yes. So they are distributing. It looks like they'll be distributing to the Lehigh Valley, Philadelphia, Lancaster, and Central Pennsylvania markets, wherever their distribution network goes.
Okay, good. I'm going to have to look for that. Because I'll tell you, you know, ever since you said kind of several weeks back, you know, how Fatheads is now kind of available in Pennsylvania, I have not been able to find that anywhere. I found it's on tap someplace down in Glenside. They have it on tap at the, what do you call it? The space and name of it. It's out kind of past Quakertown. But kind of a couple other restaurants, but I have not been able to find cans or bottles or anything of it so far.
So I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
How long do those Marin River cans last you?
A couple days. They were fantastic, I have to say. But I mean, both of them, the Marin River and the Magic Underwear were fantastic. Although I have to say, I love the Marin River one. And that's not to say that I did not like the underwear. That was phenomenal, right? But the Marin River cans were great. I mean, I had it before at Pizza Boy, and I loved it then. I did not expect it to taste so fresh and good and just wowed. Yeah, out of the can. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, my folks were down. It was my daughter's birthday this past weekend, and I just opened up those cans, or actually, it was 2 weekends ago now, I guess. But I showed, I opened up the cans, I poured it in a glass, and I made them all just smell it. Like, that's how good it was. It was unbelievable. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
That beer is one of the best smelling beers ever.
All right, it's pretty amazing. So, yeah, I mean, that thing becomes a regular out of Pizza Boy, it's gonna knock the market out.
Yeah, I brought a couple of those cans down to Forest in Maine with me last week, and I gave one can to one of my old boss back in, beer distributor guy I worked for a couple years ago. And everyone was just like, wow, just wow. Like, he called me up. He's like, what the hell is this? What you're telling me you're working here? And we're talking, just catching up with each other. He's like, man, he's like, that beer was just awesome. I couldn't believe like how good it was. He's like, thanks for giving me a can. And like, the same thing at Forest in Maine, we were just like, and people were just blown away by when I told them it was just an all citra hopped IPA. They said, no way, there has to be more hops in there than just a citra hop. But yeah. That beer, they have really zeroed in on that recipe the past few batches, and it's really starting to come into its own.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. All right, man. So I know Sean has got to get to work, so I got to let him go. So we're going to have to cut this off here. Sean, any last words for the good of the order?
Nope. Just time to go to work for a few hours today. Picking up, just picking up some extra overtime hour on just picking up a lunch shift. So I'm only working 11 to 4 today.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, and I'm going to get, I got to move all my equipment upstairs from my next round of interviews this afternoon with Colleen Clements. And that will be there available on the sit down, hopefully later. And I guess we'll see you next week. Hopefully we can talk some student loans and debit cards next week. And we should be able to have an update on how the ABSCUF strike vote went. So we'll be back next week. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. See ya.